The devil whispered to the warrior, "You are not strong enough to withstand the storm." The warrior whispered back to the devil, "I am the storm." Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to I Am the Storm. Before we even begin today, I want to thank all of you for all of your support after last week's pilot launch. Episode 1 was downloaded over 75,000 times by people from around the world. Because of all of your supports and your ratings and reviews, we jumped all the way up to number 3 in the iTunes charts. The Facebook page is already starting to fill up with people who are engaging in the I Am the Storm movement, and I even created a Twitter feed at I Am the Storm Pod. So for those of you tweeters, go ahead and follow along there. Although, as I mentioned in episode 1, most of the engagement is going to happen on the Facebook page. I'm not a big Facebook person either. I actually much prefer Twitter, but Facebook is a better platform to create the private groups. And again, that Facebook page is Bob Ruff Wellness by Storm. Now, before I begin getting into this week's storm, I want to give you all a little bit of homework. My email box has been completely flooded with people sharing their storms with me. I have honestly shed a lot of tears this week reading over emails, and it is no easy task choosing one particular storm to focus on for each week's episode. Eventually, we'll get to all of them. But what I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about today before we get started are a few things that we can do to both prepare ourselves for coming storms and to help us get past the trials and tribulations we're in the middle of right now. Now, the advice that I'm about to give you isn't anything special, and it's nothing that it takes a rocket science to figure out. But there are 3 things that you can do on a daily basis that I believe will go a long way towards improving your mental health and your mental state of mind. There are 3 simple tasks, and what I'm going to ask you to do is try to commit to doing all 3 of these every day for the next week. Then get on the Facebook page or Twitter and let me know how the homework has affected you, either in a positive or a negative way. The idea for this homework came from a photo that I posted on the Facebook page. It was last Sunday morning, and my wife Becky and I stepped outside to do our workout out in the soccer field behind our house. We took a picture so we could both share it on our own social media pages, and it immediately struck me that there were 3 things happening in that photo that is improving my overall sense of wellness, and especially my mental wellness. You see, I work in a 12-foot by 16-foot windowless studio 5 to 6 days a week, 40 to 60 hours a week. There are 2 things that do not happen in this studio. I don't get exercise of any kind, and I don't get any sunshine or fresh air of any kind. Well, in that picture, Becky and I are both lifting some weights up over our head, moving our bodies, exercising, getting the blood pumping. And I thought about how good I always feel after a workout. Even when I don't feel like doing it to begin with, once I get going and that sweat starts flowing and when it's over with, I can always look back and feel great about the fact that I did it. I have never finished a workout and thought, man, I regret doing that. So that's thing 1. Every day for the next week, I want you to make an effort to move your body for at least 30 minutes a day. Now that could mean a workout program, lifting weights, running, walking, walking the dog, riding a bike. It doesn't matter, whatever you want to do, but somehow make a conscious decision. Become the storm. Move your body for 30 minutes every day. And the second thing that was in that photo was some sunshine. I was outside, breathing fresh air, soaking up that sunshine, which is where we get a lot of our vitamin D. And it's amazing the difference in my mood on days when I get a chance to spend a lot of time outside, as opposed to when I'm stuck in the studio or the house all day. So that's thing 2. Every day, I want you to spend 30 minutes getting outside. Even if the weather's not good, find a way to get some fresh air. If it's pouring rain, sit on your screen porch if you have to, but somehow get some fresh air and, if possible, get some sunshine every day for 30 minutes. These things seem simple, but you'd be surprised how many times that doesn't happen throughout our days. We live in a very hustle-bustle society. We wake up in the morning, we take care of our kids. Some of us leave to go to work, and some of us work from home. Later, it's time to make dinner, maybe have a little family time, and then for us, we will end up on the couch watching TV. The next thing you know it, you've gone 3-4 days without getting any sunshine, any fresh air at all, and it's not healthy. So just make that decision. Every day for 30 minutes, I'm going to get some fresh air. Even if that means just taking my laptop and working outside, sitting in the lawn. can still do what you're doing, but do it in the fresh air for 30 minutes a day. And the third thing is to socialize. This has to do with Maslow's hierarchy of needs that you all read about in high school and probably college too if you went that route. But Maslow believed, and I agree, that there are certain layers of your life that you have to accomplish before you can ever achieve what he calls self-actualization, what I call just being happy and comfortable in your own skin. And one of these things is to meet your social needs. So the third thing that I want you to do every day for the next week is to commit to spend 30 minutes a day having real conversation with another human. Now, that doesn't mean just talking and passing or quick little conversations with your coworkers, but really focusing in and sitting down and having a conversation with someone. And that means being an active listener. I had a few people who are following along on social media that already started doing this. And a few people would tell me, I've done everything but socializing. I didn't get a chance to really talk to anyone today. I was busy working. And I'd reply back, I promise you there's someone out there that would love to hear from you today. So that's my statement to all of you. No matter what you think, there is someone who it would make their day to hear from you today. And it'll make a difference in both your life and theirs for something as simple as popping over to a friend's house, making a phone call, or even sitting down and asking that coworker, how is their life going and what's going on? Giving them an opportunity to open up and make that connection. If you'll do these three things for me over the next week, spend 30 minutes moving your body, 30 minutes of fresh air, and 30 minutes socializing, I can promise you, you're not going to feel any worse than you do right now, and I'd bet my bottom dollar that you're going to feel a lot better. So, now that you have your homework assignment for this week, we're about to move on to today's storm. Now, this is our first attempt at this, and I think it went really well, and I think this is going to reach a lot of you. There are many of you listening where this is going to hit you in your home. I think there's a lot of people that can help this listener, and I think that he can help a lot of you. Now, before I get into the storm segment of today's show, I want to make a disclaimer. I know you all know this, but I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, nor do I have any kind of psychological training whatsoever. Any advice that you hear from me is simply an ordinary guy giving you advice based on my own real-world experiences. And I would always recommend you consult a real counselor or therapist that actually knows what they're doing. But this show here, as you know, is about ordinary people connecting and lifting one another up and supporting each other. And that's exactly what's about to happen as we get into our first storm, parental abuse. Every year throughout the world, millions of children are abused by the people that they trust the most. Child abuse is one of the most horrific problems that we face. See, the problem is so many times it goes unreported. When you consider the facts, it's a recipe for disaster. A child is supposed to trust their parents more than anyone in the world, and they're also supposed to obey their parents. So when the parents become the abusers, who are the children to tell? Now, before we move forward, I want to make a slight distinction. Child abuse can encompass a lot of things. Physical abuse, mental, emotional abuse, and sexual abuse. And the list doesn't even stop there. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because the storm you're about to hear doesn't involve any sexual abuse, which is another devastating form of child abuse. But that's going to be for another episode. The storm we're going to address today is about a 12-year-old boy whose father had pushed him so far to the edge that the child completely snapped. Sonny Levine is a listener from California, and earlier this week he sent me this email. Hi, Bob. Wow. I didn't make it 16 minutes into the podcast before I had tears in my eyes. I don't know why, but I think it may have reminded me of something I have dealt with for the last 28 years. I don't know if this is the kind of thing you're looking for in terms of the podcasts, but here it goes. I was in fifth grade when my dad got out of prison. Before that, it was just my mom to take care of us four kids in a small town in California. I remember before he got out, I would have dreams about what it would be like to finally have a dad. I would see my friends with their complete families and be jealous, and I couldn't wait for that day to come for me. I guess I wanted to feel normal. My dad had went to prison for robbing banks. He robbed 6, but was only convicted of 5. And he chose that life of crime to feed his drug habit, heroin. The day he was released, he came to my school, and my mom brought him to my class. I remember it as clear as day. When the door opened up behind me, all I heard was, "Hey, son," and I knew it was him. Happiest day of my life up to that point. Now, fast forward a few months, and all that happiness turned to hell. To say that my dad didn't know how to be a, quote, dad would be an understatement. His dad was never there for him, and all he knew how to do was get into trouble. So he grew up hardened, incapable of showing love, support, etc. The initial abuse started as soon as he got out of the halfway house. A smack here, a punch there. Keep in mind, I am 12, maybe 100 pounds, and he's 6'2", 200 pounds, and completely yoked. Like prison yoked. Eventually things progressed, so harder punches and throwing me around. My mom did her best to keep it from happening, but looking back, she was powerless. She married a criminal, and the last thing she would do was call the police. He told her and all of us that if any of us said anything, he would kill us all. I was the kid who went to school with a black eye telling teachers I fell. In gym class, I would say I wrestled when everyone would ask why I had so many bruises as we were changing in the locker room. To this day, I still have scars on my back from the beatings. By the time I was 15, I thought I had gotten used to it. But little did I know, I was about to snap. I was so scared of him, all the time, and nervous just to be around him. On this particular night, we were all sitting around the table for dinner, and my mom had made tacos. I was so nervous. I was shaking and started to laugh, which pissed him off. He told me to stop or he'd beat the shit out of me, which only made me more nervous and made me laugh again. I remember he launched himself from the table, picked me up by the neck, and started walking toward the bedroom before throwing me against a wall. I remember blacking out with the sight of my mom trying to get him off of me. I didn't feel him punching me. The next thing I know, I wake up and she's getting me off the floor and he's sitting by himself at the table, eating. I don't know how I remembered, but it was right then that I remembered that my brother's friend had given him a gun. It was a .22. I went into my room and asked my brother where it was, and then headed straight for the kitchen. I remember feeling numb and mad. I was no longer scared and didn't care what happened to me. I was going to kill this motherfucker. With no hesitation, I walked right up to the back of him, still sitting there, put the gun to the back of his head, and pulled the trigger. That's where the story ends for most people. But I guess God, or whatever higher power there is, had something else in mind. The courage and absence of fear drained from me the instant the gun didn't go off. The bullet was a dud. I was dead, I thought. He would surely kill me now. But again, God or whoever saved me. He turned around, told me to put my toy away and come back to the table and finish eating. He didn't even know it was a real gun and that I had just tried to kill him. To this day, it makes no sense to me. Anyway, throughout the years of abuse and being told my whole life that I would be nothing and would never amount to anything just killed my self-confidence. I gained a lot of it back when I joined the military, which I served in for over 10 years. In 2008, I woke up and had the realization that I was no longer that little kid afraid of his dad, and for whatever reason, I wanted to talk to him. The last time I had heard from him was in 1998. I was nervous but kind of anxious to let him know that I had forgiven him for the past, and that regardless, he was my dad, and I loved him. I remember calling the number I found for him, not knowing if he'd recognize who I was, the man that I had become and the success I had, despite what he would always tell me. It rang a few times before the recorded message came on, saying the number had been disconnected. Bummer, maybe I can find a way to write to him. Again, God or whoever intervened. The very next day, I had a friend request from a woman and didn't know who she was until I looked at the last name and then realized it was his sister. Surely she would know where he is, and again, my hopes were high and I was excited. The first thing I asked her was where he was, but she didn't answer, instead asking if she could call me. When she called, I still had hope, but before long it was torn away. She told me that he had died in 2006 and was found alone in a hotel room. Heroin overdose. It's 2017, Bob, but fuck, it still gets me. My eyes are watering again. To this day, I ask myself, what if? What if I had found him sooner? Would it have made a difference? What if he knew that I wanted to forgive him and let him know I still loved him regardless? Well, this June, I just graduated college with a degree in psychology, and I picked it because I wanted to know how to understand not just myself, but others as well. My storm will eventually pass, but if I can do it, then anyone can. It was never easy, but just the same with the fitness stuff. If you're willing to do the work and stay motivated, you can overcome anything. Take care, my friend. Keep up the great work. Sonny Levine. Sonny's story, like so many I've read this week, struck a chord with me. There were just so many layers. The mental and physical abuse that he suffered through, the fact that he had made a conscious decision to kill his father, and yet somehow the gun didn't go off. What might have been had that gun fired? Where might he be today? But the reason I really wanted to talk to Sonny was not only because I think that he could help a lot of you that are listening right now, but there's something that Sonny needs to hear. So I got in touch with Sonny and arranged to get him on the phone. Just getting on the phone, Sonny, I read your email on the air, so everyone heard the story. I know there's a lot more to it, but this is kind of our first full normal episode, and we're still kind of dynamically feeling this thing out. And so since I wanted to feature your storm on the show today, I reached out to you and said either I can just read it and talk about it, or you can come on with me and talk about it. And luckily, Sonny was comfortable enough coming on the air with and sharing a little bit more about his storm. First of all, thanks, Sonny, for coming on the air. I really appreciate you, you taking the time to do that and taking this kind of leap of faith with a bunch of strangers to talk about this.
Oh, it's not a problem at all. I really don't consider anybody listening a stranger after all this time, so we're good.
All right, that's awesome. And it sounds like you went through, your storm had many layers to it, it sounds like. So I kind of want to touch on first. So it says you were in fifth grade when your dad got out of prison. How old were you when your dad went into prison?
I don't even know. He was in jail or some form of, prison, whatever it was, all my life prior to him getting out. My earliest memories of him actually being out, there's only one, memory I have, and I think I was probably maybe seven. There's no way to know for sure, but that's the only memory. The rest of the time, it was, we had to visit him on the weekends. And, on Saturdays when we could, we'd go visit him for a couple hours, and that was the only time we could see him.
So really a big part of this, and it sounds like it's kind of a bit of emotional roller coaster for you, was that, growing up, you probably had a fantasy of what it would be like to have him home as your dad. Did you have high expectations when he came home?
Yeah. Well, you hit the nail on the head, fantasy. I would have dreams of what it would be like to, have a dad and have someone to play catch with and be at my games when I was playing sports and, that kind of thing. It sounds crazy, but I was so jealous of my friends who had a quote regular family, mom and dad. They're both there. They're both supportive and their dads have regular jobs and that kind of thing.
I don't think it sounds crazy at all. I mean, I see that even with, kids that come from, like mine. That come from even just divorced parents, where they spend every other week with one parent or the other. I'm sure that those kids look at other, the people who come from, families that aren't divorced and think, wow, what's it like to be with the same parents every day? So I don't think it's crazy at all for you to kind of look at them and be jealous about that.
Yeah, that's how it was. And so when he finally did get out and he, he came to my school, my back was to the door and, "Hey, son," I knew right away that was him. And that was the happiest day of my life to that point. And I was just like, okay, finally, it was almost like fitting in, I guess is how you can relate it these days, where for someone who wouldn't understand would be like, if you're someone who doesn't have the coolest pairs of shoes, well, you get the coolest pair of shoes. Now you can fit in. Well, that's how it was for me, except it was sadly just having a dad.
Yeah, that's great. So it sounds like, was it almost like, like what you see him put on the news when the soldier comes home from tour and surprises their kid at school? Was it kind of like that?
Yeah, it was. I mean, without the crying, I mean, because we had seen him, you know, week by week, but it was just, he was finally free, you know, it wasn't, we didn't have to go through getting searched by, correctional officers and going through a metal detecting machine and, you know, having to have our whole life on display in front of all these other, you know, inmates and families, and just being out of that element was just a big, you know, like finally a normal, you know, it was just good. But it was similar, but not the same. Cause I mean, I did the whole military thing, and coming back to that, that's a really great feeling too, but very similar.
Once he was back, obviously you finally have your dreams coming true. How long was it before things started, the reality started crashing in on you? Was there any period of time where like things were awesome with Dad at home, or did it go downhill immediately?
Oh no. For the first, the whole time he was in the halfway house, if people aren't familiar, a halfway house is where inmates will go after they've been in prison for a long time. It helps them adjust to regular life outside of bars, and you know, they have them, you know, get a job and that kind of thing. Well, the whole time he was in the halfway house, he was in L.A., so it was a couple hours away from where we lived, which was Lompoc, California, small town. But I would get to see him as much as I wanted, so I would, you know, there were times where I could go stay with him for a week, and, you know, he could come stay with us, and, you know, everything was great. But it seemed, I would say, how long was he? He was probably in the halfway house for maybe 6 months. I can't remember the exact amount of time, but basically once he was free from that, and he had like full freedom and he started working, and that's kind of where things, you know, I'd say once he started getting around the element that he was away from for so long, that's when things started to go downhill really quick.
Now, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have twin sisters and one brother, and then from him, and then I have a brother and a sister from my mom's previous relationship. So stepbrother and sister.
How many of you were still in the house as kids when your dad came home?
Oh, it was just the four of us, me, my two sisters, and my brother.
And then, of course, mom and dad. Yeah. So the abuse, was it the physical abuse that started from there? And we read it in your letter, so the listeners have kind of heard some of that story. But was it focused just on you or primarily on you, or did it spread around to all four?
I got the worst of it. And I don't want to say it was because I was the oldest, but that's kind of what it seemed like. I was the oldest. I got the worst of it. He was definitely abusive to all of us, and, you know, more in different ways with each one of us. Me, very physically, and then emotionally, you know, being told the things he would tell me all the time. But yeah, it was spread around. I remember there were times where, and I didn't realize it till later, but he would always, you know, who do you think you are? And I'd respond, nobody. And that went on for so long that it just came normal. And, you know, I finally realized one day, I keep telling him I'm nobody. Well, no wonder why, you know, I feel the way I do. Yeah, it's really, I mean, I'm 40 now, and this was, you know, so long ago, but you know, with that kind of, when you go through that, it sticks with you. And that doesn't mean that, you know, that doesn't mean that you don't get over it. It's just something that it's always there. And, you know, those experiences, they don't leave. If anything, I guess it just really depends on the person, how they use it to move forward with their life.
I mean, some of those wounds, obviously you suffered physical wounds, but it sounds to me like, you know, and this is kind of the element of how what we're doing here could be so powerful, because I don't have experience in this particular storm, but you do. And there's so many others that do too, but it would seem to me that the emotional wounds just cut so much deeper and last so much longer than the physical wounds.
Yep. That's very true. The physical stuff, you know, you feel the pain and then it goes away. The emotional stuff, constantly feeling scared. We didn't walk on eggshells. We walked on eggshells on top of eggshells. You know, it was just crazy. You know, it seems hard to explain, but to live with someone who you're scared of constantly, to the point where, you know, like I said, you know, I'm sitting at a dinner table, we're having dinner, and I'm so scared and nervous of this guy, who's my dad, that I'm shaking. And my nervous, you know, response aside from that was a little laugh, which completely infuriated him.
And that's what led to that beating you took that night that ultimately led to you essentially you made an attempt to kill your father.
That was when I broke. I don't know the psychological term for it, but at that point, that was when I came back from blacking out. There was something inside of me that just said, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to kill this dude. And that was when I realized, you know, I remembered, crap, you know, that dude, he gave my brother Gabe, that's his name, Gabe, and he gave him a gun. We lived in the ghetto, and, you know, his friend was not rich, but they were better off. And he said, hey, if you ever need this gun, here. And I remembered it the second I woke up from that little mini coma or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I went in the room. I said, Gabe, where's that gun? And I was mad, and I was, you know, I'm this little, you know, 5 foot, 100 foot, nothing, you know, kid. And I said, where's that gun? And he gave it to me, and I walked right in there. His back was to me. I put it right to the back of his head and pulled the trigger.
Did your brother know what you were going to do with the gun?
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't, you know, we were all going through it.
Right.
You know, and it was like this big, I don't want to say a secret, but like my mom and all of his kids knew that, you know, he was trouble. You know, something with bad was really going to happen, you know, and my mom later would say, you know, I thought of ways to kill him too. But yeah, he knew right when I said, where's that gun? Because he had just witnessed, you know, and everybody had witnessed things that had happened to me specifically before. All the stuff that happened to everybody else, that was, I didn't see a lot of that. You know, that was kind of behind closed doors. But we all knew that was happening to all of us. But yeah, when I went in there and I said, where's that gun? He knew exactly what was going on, and he grabbed it. You know, he took the little, it was hidden, in the closet. There was like a little like door with a handle on it to get to the plumbing. And he put it in there and he pulled it, gave it to me, and went in there and just put it at the back of his head and pulled the trigger.
To think through the emotions that you were going through with the feelings as in beating you down physically and emotionally and mentally over the years, and just I'm sure your self-esteem had to be down to nothing, and to take that moment and decide, I've had enough, and to do that, and then to have that not happen, you know, I think you put in your letter, and I don't know what your faith or belief system is, but when you said that it was, you know, God or whoever made that gun not go off. And it just that really, you know, we've gotten so many emails this week, and there's so many that we're going to cover as the weeks and months go by. But it was like that point mm-hmm. in your story that really, really got my attention, when it was like, how different would your life be now if that gun had fired? You know, what would that life look like now?
I think I would have went a completely different path. I think it would have been for the negative, to be honest. Not that I, you know, because, I mean, I can't know for sure, but just knowing how I was at the time, like how I was just mentally, physically, emotionally just done, I think
right.
if that would have happened and I would have killed him, I think that it would have just got me involved with, you know, the legal system. And, you know, I mean, my mom's friend at the time was a DA, and, you know, she told him, and he told her, you know, even if it would have happened, you know, they would have taken the history, and basically he would have been okay. But I mean, I just really think that if that would have happened, I think that being tore down the way I was, not caring, I think it would have just, you know, knowing right from wrong is one thing, but when you feel like nothing you do is right, and, you know, you take care of the problem, you know, the way I would have, which would have been to kill him, I just don't think I would have recovered from that. And I think I probably would have, you know, probably ended up like him, not necessarily with drugs, but probably in some kind of crime or something.
Well, and the most powerful part of your story is, so, you know, call it divine intervention, call it dumb luck, whatever it is, that gun misfires and it doesn't yep. go off that day. But then you know what you had said in the end of your email, that at some point your storm will pass. But to me, what you had wrote and what you've done with your life since then is the epitome of what this movement is, because your storm's not going to pass. You became the storm. You took charge of your life. You went out. You enlisted in the military. You started a career. You started believing in yourself. You went to college. You got a degree. And now here you are right now, and believe it or not, Sonny, there's tens of thousands of people listening to you right now. And of those tens of thousands, there are lots of them that had similar experiences that you're about to go out and help and make a difference for them because you became the storm and took charge of your life.
I never thought of it like that. That makes me smile. Well, don't make me cry on the air, Bob. Don't make me cry.
It brought me to tears. I was laying. So, and just for everyone listening that have sent me emails, I'm trying to figure out a way to. So this is what's happening, Sonny. I'm reading all. I literally personally read every single email, and there's a lot of them. And I want to at least reply to every one, but there's so many just saying, "Hey, thanks," isn't enough. So it's like I'm not replying because I want to write everybody a book, and I don't have time to do that. But in any case, your email, it was like 12 o'clock at night. I was laying in bed with my wife. We were getting ready to watch the finale episode of House of Cards, and I was reading it, and it just brought me to tears because it was like, if I felt like you didn't even realize how you've taken control of your life, how you have affected change. Because I mean, you just recently finished a bachelor's degree, right?
That's right. Yeah, bachelor's in psychology.
Yeah, in psychology. I mean, way to take something that was just, I mean, literally mentally, again, there's physical wounds that eventually heal, but the mental abuse that you went under, and then you turned that around to where, you know, 28 years later, you have a degree in psychology and you're taking charge of things. So, you know, what we're going to do here, Sonny, if you're willing to do this, is we're going to, as we said, we're going to, on the Facebook page, which is Bob Ruff's Wellness by Storm, we're going to create a private group. So when you go to that page, people who are listening, there'll be a link with an invitation into this private group. Now, the topic for this group, and there'll be a different one every week, and they'll go on and on. I mean, this thing can go on for years, decades, but every week we'll be putting up a new one. This week will be people who have, in some way or another, have experienced or suffered through parental abuse, whether it be the child or a spouse or whoever it is. And Sonny, what I'd like to do, I'll be an initial admin of that group. And if you're willing to do it, I'd like to make you an admin of that group, and you help to lead the fight with these other people that are going to come in and are going to work through their storm that is similar to yours. Are you willing to do that?
100%, definitely. Anything I could do to help other people, you know, if I can do it, then anybody can. And if they're, you know, if they're not sure, I mean, I'm a prime example. You know, 5 minutes ago, I didn't realize that I actually created the storm, you know, and took ownership, and now here I am. So, you know, I can help them with that too.
That's awesome. Well, then that's exactly what we're going to do. And then you are going to be the leader of that group. And then in doing so, is it, you know, we don't know, this being so new, this whole movement in its infancy, you know, there could be 20 people in there, or there could be 5,000 people in there over time. you know, so we don't know what that's going to look like, but you know, as time goes on and you need more people to help you, you'll be in there and interacting with people and seeing what's happening, and can choose people and ask them, say, hey, will you step up and be an admin too? And will you help and start creating a network and a support group and just run it any way that you all feel that it needs to be run? You know, and I'll be in there to answer any questions and give any moral support that I can. But, you know, this one isn't my storm. It's yours. And you listening right now with the tears running down your face, it's your storm too. So go to that Facebook page. Join that group. Sonny's is gonna lead the way, and you're all about to go be the storm. I know that there are a lot of you listening who are moved by Sonny's storm. Many of you have been through similar experiences. Some of you are walking through the same storm right now. And some of you are just touched by a person who's willing to share their life so openly, like Sonny just did. But for those of you where that storm really hit home with them, please go to the Facebook page, click the link to get into the group, and join the group of people that are all coming together to help each other walk through this storm. And now for the very last segment of today's show. This will be short and sweet, I promise. But this is where I want to check back in with you all and talk to you a little bit about my storm. I told you in episode one that I was really struggling with getting healthy and losing weight. I had started a new program and it was starting to work. Well, I'm proud to say that as of today, it's 14 days into this program, and I've lost 11 pounds. And unfortunately, I didn't take measurements, but there are some before and after photos up on the Facebook page, and you can see that those 11 pounds came with a lot of inches. I've still got a long way to go, and I'm still fighting through this storm. But having all of you behind me, supporting me, whether it be on Facebook, Twitter, or even on Snapchat, pushing me along and making sure that I'm doing my workouts every day has been an incredible help for me. There are plenty of times where I was working late this week and didn't get done in the office until after 9 o'clock at night. And before this I Am the Storm movement, that would have been the end of my night. But what I knew is there were people watching on Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, who wanted to know if I was going to step up and do my workout that day. And so every day, I stepped up and I did it. So I want to thank all of you for holding me accountable. Now, I am going to start another private group, and that's for people that are going through a fitness journey like me. There's no particular workout routine required to be in the group. Whatever you're doing is fine. Now, I have had a lot of people ask what I'm doing. I think a lot of that is because you've seen my before and afters as I'm working through this storm on the Facebook page, and you know that what I'm doing is working, especially considering I'm a 38-year-old man. So I want to explain really quickly here what it is that I'm doing for any of you that want to do the same thing with me. I'm doing a program called Shift Shop, and next week I'm going to start my second round. I would love to have some people along with me that are doing the exact same thing, the same eating plan, and the same workout. So if you're interested in doing the same thing that I'm doing, and again, this is not a requirement, and please don't consider this a sales pitch. I just want to take a minute to share with you something I feel so passionate about because it's actually working for me. Shift Shop is a Beachbody program. I do it through Beachbody On Demand. Beachbody On Demand is a new product by Beachbody. Instead of buying individual sets of DVDs, you buy an annual membership to Beachbody On Demand. It's just like Netflix in every single workout program they've ever made, all the way back to the hip-hop ab days, all the way up now to Shift Shop. In between there, there's P90X, 21 Day Fix, T25, Insanity, just to name a few of the thousands. Now, like I said, I'm doing Shift Shop, but there are 1,000 other options with Beachbody On Demand. And then the other big part has been my nutrition, which I believe is a huge portion of why I've been having so much success. For the last 2 weeks, every morning when I wake up, I have a chocolate vegan Shakeology. Now, that's just the flavor that I like the best. There's regular chocolate, there's vanilla, strawberry, green berry, cafe latte. There's a bunch of flavors. But the point is I have Shakeology every morning. It's a simple shake. It's packed full of protein and superfoods and probiotics and prebiotics. And it gets me all the nutrition that I need that I'm not getting through my food. Then I'm using the meal plan that comes along with Shift Shop. And that's it. That's all I've been doing. Shakeology every morning, and that's not a meal replacement. It's just a shake that adds on with the food. Doing the Shift Shop meal plan and the Shift Shop workout plan. That's what I've been doing. 38 years old. I've lost 11 pounds so far in 14 days. I'm feeling better than I have in a long time. My energy level is through the roof. My attitude is through the roof. I'm just feeling great right now. So that's as detailed as I'm going to get into that here. If you're interested in that and you go to the Facebook page, there's a pinned post that has some information about the Beachbody On Demand, or just message me there if you want more information about the Shakeology, the Beachbody On Demand, the Shift Shop, any of that, and then look on the Facebook page for a private group where we can all get in together and hold each other accountable. And like I said before, Beachbody is not a requirement to be in the group. That's just what I'm doing that has been working so well for me. And so for all of you that want to know what I'm doing, that's it. And anybody that wants to join me, I'd love to have you doing the same thing I am. But if that's not your thing, that's cool. We're still going to do this together, and we're all going to live a healthier lifestyle, and we are all going to be the storm. I Am the Storm is a production of NBI Studios. Michael Bussing is our executive producer. All music for the show was created by PutThemInASong.com. The logo art was created by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. I want to thank all of you for all of your engagement and support. Keep emailing me your storms to storm@nbistudios.com. Most importantly, to stay engaged, go to our Facebook page, Bob Ruff's Wellness by Storm. You can also follow along on Twitter, @IAmTheStormPod. Whatever you do, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get engaged, change some lives, be the storm. I'm looking forward to connecting with every single one of you. But until next week, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been I Am the Storm.